Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
We're doing our list of the kinds of polystrate fossils.
The kinds of polystrate fossils.
Right, not just a list of fossils that go up through multiple layers.
Yeah.
But RSR's list of the kinds of polystrate fossils. Fred, a lot of input from last week's program. People seem to love it. And so now there's high expectation. We got to keep building out this argument.
Yeah.
And for a young Earth.
Yeah, and people think of polystrate fossils, when they think of a list, they think of trees. So it's great that we emphasize the different kinds, not just trees.
Now, when they do think of trees, the most famous place in the world, I think, is Joggins, Nova Scotia, in Canada, Lancashire, England, Germany's Ruhr region, Specimen Ridge, in Yellowstone. We've been there. We got a video about it. In fact, we might play the audio of that video later in this program. But a listener wrote in to say, hey, these well-known polystrate areas are in way more locations than you guys have mentioned.
Yeah, this listener mentioned they're in eastern U.S., France, Germany, Australia.
Yes.
And Bob, you wrote a something.
It's worldwide.
Yeah, it's worldwide. I like what you wrote on Wikipedia for their polystrate fossil article.
Oh, yeah.
On their talk page.
Now, Fred, I've probably made about 800 edits on Wikipedia over the years. Many are in their actual articles, like their article on the nuclear strong force, for example, on the Sea of Tranquility. But for this topic, this past week, I didn't edit the article itself, but what they call the talk page. So behind every article, pretty much on Wikipedia, millions of articles, there's a talk page where people discuss what should or shouldn't be included in the article, or they discuss the topic.
Yeah. So on the Wikipedia talk page for polystrate fossils, you wrote this, and I quote, "Trees are only one kind of polystrate fossil. There are many different kinds of fossils, other than trees, that are buried in multiple strata, including, of course, virtually all significantly three-dimensional fossils buried in deposits marked by multiple microstratum."
So, Fred, very narrow strata.
Yep.
Right? This is in text, but for the radio audience, in other words, if you have a fossil, some fossils are flat like a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so amazing. So many fish fossils. And I think with Real Science Radio, we explain how that came to be. But a lot of other fossils are three-dimensional. And if they are buried in many layers of microstrata, then they qualify as, they don't have to be trees, they qualify as polystrate fossils.
So you go on and say, there are also corporate fossils, so to speak, assemblages of entire school of jellyfish, for example, buried in multiple rock layers. And of course, we've covered this on the show many times.
And we'll talk about it in particular later in today's program.
And there's a related phenomena of relatively large organisms like nautiloids in the Grand Canyon's Red Wall limestone buried in a single rock layer. But that layer is explained to have formed at rates of hundreds to thousands of years per inch.
Mm.
The terms upright fossil trunks and upright fossil trees do not express the essential multiple strata aspect of the fossils being discussed in this article.
Yeah, Fred, they're saying, well, if it's upright, well, that's not the point if it's upright.
Yeah.
The point is that one organism is passing through multiple layers of strata. That's the point.
Yep.
Fred, and for the rest of the comment, I point out, if there's a fossil buried, say, in volcanic ash from one volcanic event, well, then it might be upright, but it's not considered a polystrate fossil.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also mention a whale skeleton that's lying, you know, maybe closer to horizontal, but it's buried in diatoms, diatomaceous sediments that supposedly, you know, get deposited over thousands or millions of years. So these are the kind of fossils that we're talking about. And I end this comment saying, if geologists don't have a name for this phenomenon, it's not going to be properly studied by them, giving a virtual monopoly on the study of polished straits to young Earth creationists.
Yeah, what a great point.
Which is true.
Yeah. So, right. So they're pretty much ignoring this evidence, right?
Yes. Yeah, they are. And so
they act like it isn't there. You know, as we mentioned in the last show, it's totally missing from the textbooks.
Yeah.
We could not find an example of polystrate fossils being discussed
in some of the
high school
top 10 high school and college level texts that we were able to search online. So we went through in part one last week, we went through four evolutionary explanations for polystrates: rapid sedimentation, persistent trees, persistent organisms with rapid sedimentation. I mean, we're trying to stretch it. We're trying to give them some like way to describe these things, or they're rare enough to ignore.
Yep.
Polystrate fossils are extremely rare and mostly a creationist exaggeration, so they could be ignored. And we gave a list of the kinds of polystrate fossils. Now, a listener added a kind. We got an email on that with a beautiful photo.
Yeah. He added dinosaur footprints, you know, right near us, just right up here, Dinosaur Ridge.
Yeah.
You know, the Ed Holroyd loves to give tours up there.
That's right. Dr. Ed Holroyd is a creationist, a government scientist. He's been presenting on Dinosaur Ridge for decades.
For decades. And, you know, it's dinosaur footprints that you can see are running from something, too. Mm. But there's something interesting that he pointed out about a dinosaur footprint that he provided a picture of,
And this
of
is
too.
Common, and you could see it there. I've seen it in person a dozen times. This massive dinosaur footprint, and it is deforming multiple rock layers.
Now, so multiple rock layers.
Yeah, so strata. Each layer is a strata,
so,
geologic
strata. How could that happen if they were laid down like
over a long period of time?
Yeah.
Obviously, they were all soft when the dinosaur went running through that patch of wet sand that later turned into sandstone, for example. So we've added that. So our kinds of polystrate fossils: upright trees, a school of jellyfish fossilized, and we're going to talk about each of these in some detail.
Yeah, one of our listeners, his favorite was the leaves, the leaf.
Oh, yeah.
An upright leaf.
Two leaves standing on edge on top of each other through diatomaceous sediments.
That's quite the trick.
A mesosaur, that is its skeleton, its fossil in annual layers called varves. A group of tadpoles, 170 of them. A fossilized school of whales buried across four strata. Delicate spines from an organism, rock layer, solid, which today is solid rock. Nautiloids, we got to talk about the nautiloids in the Grand Canyon and the Redwall limestone. And limestone supposedly is deposited at a rate of hundreds of years to thousands of years per inch, and you got these big old nautiloids buried there, entombed in limestone. You've got a fossilized school of perch.
Trout.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole school fossilized. You've got three-dimensional trilobites fossilized again in limestone, which supposedly forms so incredibly slowly. And in fact, a listener in the Philippines donated to Real Science Radio, beautiful fossil trilobite, about 10 inches, 12 inches or so. I got to measure it. And we got a photo of it that we'll talk about. It's on this show page at rsr.org/polystrate fossils. And then all the other millions of fossils that cross strata boundaries.
Yep. So now it's time for us to rebut these old Earth polystrate explanations when you are able to get one.
Okay.
So let's go ahead and deal with them. The first one was rapid sedimentation.
Okay.
So is that a convincing argument?
It is, and I think they're right.
Yeah.
So let's dump this whole thing.
Yeah, let's go on to the next show.
Okay. In fact, let's do a BEL program on exorcism. Okay, so Fred, which by the way, in the whole Old Testament, there's not a single incident of demon possession or exorcism in the entire Old Testament.
And if you're going to find it, you'd expect it to find it there, wouldn't you?
Yeah. So it did happen during the Gospels in that time of incredible spiritual warfare. But different topic. So no, we don't want to drop it just because they said rapid sedimentation. So Fred, even if the Earth were billions of years old, secular geologists show an astounding lack of curiosity about polystrates. And by those fossils, which strata could be shown to have been deposited rapidly? So you would think that they would be thrilled to study these things when you consider the layers that bury polystrate fossils. Those layers, they don't just extend out only 2 feet or so from the tree or from whatever polystrate fossil that they bury. And for example, let's say you got a tree growing in a hole and there was some kind of a local riverbed breached and there was a local flood and the hole was filled up with sediments.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, look at that. The whole tree, 20 feet tall, and it's buried in sediments, but the sediments only go out like 7 or 8 feet and that's it. They end those strata.
So your point is the strata actually goes out much farther from these polystrates. It's not like it just kind of is isolated to this one small
right
area.
Right by the tree. So maybe they go out, let's say, 100 meters or more reasonably 1,000 meters or hundreds of kilometers or 1,000 kilometers, so that if you find a polystrate tree, just one, let alone so many, running through these layers, and you say, we could explain that as secular geologists. The layers that buried that tree were laid down rapidly. So we say, okay, great. Now let's mark those layers and see how far they
go. Exactly. What a great point.
Yeah. And if they go from Nova Scotia to Maine or further, we know that in the Grand Canyon, the Redwall Limestone gets exposed as far as Lake Mead Boulevard in Las Vegas.
Wow.
We're talking about thousands of square miles. And they have these fossils that indicate that this layer right here, this basal bottom 8 foot layer of the Redwall Limestone, had to be deposited rapidly because you got 18 inch long nautiloids, some of them standing on their point vertically, and they're buried. So,
and when they do end, Bob, when you can kind of see that they end, what's super interesting is oftentimes they interleave with the neighboring formation layers.
Wow.
So you might as well just continue.
Wow.
I mean, now, it's a serious problem.
Okay, interleaving. That is such a good point, Fred. And I think we see that maybe most often with coal seams.
Coal seams. Mm-hmm.
And so we're on the radio. We don't have diagrams to show listeners. But take your two hands, separate your fingers an inch or so from each other, and bring them together so that your fingers are being interleaved from your right hand to your left hand, one on top of the other. So if you follow coal seams and these extraordinary deposits, which exist here and there, of you'll find coal, maybe then a layer of sandstone, maybe then a layer of limestone, maybe coal, maybe sandstone, and you might find a repeating sequence of layers. When the coal mining industry, when they follow that coal seam, because it's worth millions of dollars potentially, they follow it to the end and they often feather at the end, like you're holding your fingers of your hand, your fingers apart.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the different layers might feather to an end. And then an adjacent rock formation, just whatever's next door, maybe, you know, some kilometers away, meets those layers and interleaved. And now you've got a question as a geologist. If these layers with the coal seams have trees growing vertically through them or other organisms that tell us that it's rapid sedimentation, that's their big answer. Well, then as you take that out, how about these other rock layers that are interbedded or interleaved with the rock layers in the coal mine? Were they also rapidly deposited?
Yeah.
It seems like it because they're interleaved. They're connected.
And so really one of these polystrate trees invalidates or falsifies the assumptions made on this entire line of strata
of that
from
sequence,
one to the other.
Right
who,
there.
Yeah. However many miles that it is.
Yes.
And it's not just one that we find. There's multiple polystrate fossils in these sediments.
Oh, yeah. And it, like you said, a single one could indicate that an area thousands of square miles had to experience rapid sedimentation. Secular geologists are completely uninterested.
They are. They are uninterested. Completely. And that's why we feel like this is, first of all, the best show ever on polystrate fossils.
Yeah.
And a super important show. It really is a powerful argument against millions of years, the old earth geology. It just, it drives a tree right through their argument.
Well, we had an old earth geologist on this program a couple weeks ago, one of the world's leading experts against global warming. Mm-hmm. He's Al Gore's nemesis, the Inconvenient Facts author, Gregory Wrightstone. And after the program, you know, we did the show on the climate hoax, which was great. And after it, he and I talked for a while about dinosaur soft tissue. He said, send me the link. And I did. Fred, old earth geologist, couldn't be less interested in dinosaur soft tissue. Mm-hmm. It's the greatest discovery in the history of paleontology, and they don't know about it, as Gregory had no idea, never heard of it. How could it be? You know? There's over 100 papers we've documented now of that kind of discovery in the journals Nature and Science, but none of them talk about it. They don't care about it. They wish it were not true. And the same thing is the case with polystrate fossils. Even if the Earth was billions of years old, you would think they want to know how these layers were laid down. They'd be all over this, but they're not.
They're not.
They're not interested.
Yep. Their minds are made up despite the evidence. So, Bob, the next one is persistent trees. These are awfully persistent trees.
Yeah. So creationist rebuttal of these evolutionary explanations for polystrates. Well, trees cannot remain upright for thousands or millions of years. So on Wikipedia, elsewhere, where they do begrudgingly address the topic, they'll say, well, you've got trees that are buried in some kind of a volcanic event, and say they're just buried rapidly, or two or three flows of pyroclastic ash out of a volcano, and it buried. And here we got two or three sediments, and so that explains these upright trees in this forest. Well, no kidding. That's obvious. Yes, yep. Agreed. That could happen. A local flood could bury trees standing upright. That's not the argument. The argument is sediments that are claimed to have been laid down over hundreds of thousands or millions of years, and yet you have polystrates through them. Mm-hmm. And your refusal, Mr. Secular Geologist, to want to see where that strata extends to. So, Fred, trees just can't stand for as long as the sediments that we're going to be explaining
waiting to
as
be
we go
buried
through
over and over again. They
right.
They can't do that.
Right. Yeah, like at Yellowstone.
Yeah, Yellowstone is, Specimen Ridge?
Yeah.
And we've talked about that before.
Yeah, and I think we'll do that in some detail a little later. But over and over and over, dozens of times, the standard geological explanation was on all these strata in this area in Yellowstone, they envision a series of forests coming and going, dozens of them on top of one another. So they're not talking about 10 or 20 years. They're talking about the time it would take for an entire forest to thrive and then somehow die out, get buried in sediments, mm-hmm. then another forest thrive and die out, get buried in sediments over a large geographic area, then another forest thrive and then die out and get buried in trees that grow up through these. And so we're saying these are the kind of strata that you guys say took millions of years, and we have the evidence to prove it because we have the photographs of your exhibits, which the National Park Service took down.
Yep.
And so that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
We're talking about the story you guys tell in textbooks of tens, hundreds of thousands of years passing where there are fossils that are vertically buried in those layers.
Yeah, and trees are not the only kind of polystrate fossils. As we've mentioned, leaves cannot remain upright.
No,
that is vertical for dozens of years, let alone millions.
Yeah, right, right. And a school of fish, you know, frozen in place. It's not going to happen slowly over the time it takes for that particular rock that they're saying they were entombed in, buried in, for that rock to form the way that mainstream geology claims it forms.
Yep.
So, Fred, that's our answer to persistent trees. They can't last as long as they need them to last, and they're not all trees.
Yeah. I like your next one. Persistent organisms with rapid sedimentation.
It's just sort of a combination of the two.
Do we really need to respond further to this one? I mean, because it came from Talk Origins, and you know how I feel about Talk Origins.
Yeah.
You know, that site's apparently overrun by potheads.
That's true.
Not unlike the Flat Earth movement, who's run by potheads and an evolutionist.
Yeah, right, exactly. The head of the Flat Earth Society is a Darwinist. So, yeah, it's just the first two explanations, rapid sedimentation and persistent trees.
Yeah.
And put together. No kidding. Obviously,
yeah, we'll move
that's
on
what's
from
being
the,
said.
Yeah, so pothead claim.
That's not really another explanation. Then how about the fourth evolutionary explanation of polystrates?
Yeah, this is the one I've heard, and it's that they're rare enough to ignore when I've debated this topic with evolutionists. Oh,
yes. They're
rare. They don't happen that often.
Right. And you, if you're really a scientist, you love the anomalies.
Yeah.
The anomalies are often what point you to the errors in the accepted theories. And anomalies, it's almost like they should put a sign around every anomaly's neck that says, look at me, look at me, look at me. And so, yeah, they want to say that it's so rare you could ignore it, which shows their lack of scientific curiosity, which they have ditched in favor of a PR for their old Earth evolution.
Yeah, their lack of scientific acumen.
Yes.
Because there are actually many millions, if not billions, of polystrate fossils.
Yeah. When you take all the kinds of polystrates into account, that means there are millions, right?
And that's why I think it's
like
great
you said,
that
billions.
Yeah, we're emphasizing that it's not just trees. There's all different kinds of polystrates all around the globe.
So this shows, just like dinosaur soft tissue, that polystrates are not rare, but common, and they appear throughout the fossil record. Now, we've been saying we're going to talk about each of these kinds separately.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we begin with that listener who said his favorite example was the leaves that are buried in diatomaceous rock.
Yeah.
We've got a photo of this.
Now, there's a photo.
Yes.
It's on rsr.org/polystrate.
Yes, it comes from John McKay. Fred, I don't know if you know this. A few months ago, I got an email from a science organization, and they said, you got a copyright problem on your website. And when you have thousands of pages on a website.
And I know you're super careful about all that stuff.
And we've gotten rights for so many photos and, you know, fair use doctrine. It's quite the issue. Well, this is a John McKay photo. And you guys are violating the copyright. You know, I'm so thankful the internet is forever. So I search, and sure enough, John McKay, years ago, gave us permission, Real Science Radio, to use this photo.
Hmm.
So that was real encouraging to me, and I got to tell the science group, hey, thanks for your concern, but here's the permission we received.
Yeah. So leaves, what a great polystrate for creationists. You know, imagine a toothpick. You can stick it in the ground and it'll stay there for a little while.
Yeah.
Do that trick with a leaf. Good luck.
Right. Stand a leaf by its stem. Stick its stem into the sand, into the soil.
And try to even bury it. Give it a little bit of help.
Oh, and balance another leaf on top of it.
Yeah.
So they're standing
that's a really
vertically.
Good trick.
And then you have to leave it there long enough for the diatoms. That's what makes up
single-celled
these
algae.
Microorganisms that make up diatomaceous rock, super slow deposition. You know, you go on Wikipedia, how long does it take for amber to form? Or manganese nodules, you know, they're millions of years. Slowest growing phenomena on Earth. Millions of years to form a manganese nodule. Fred, do you remember we talked about this on our list of not so old things?
Oh, yeah.
The documentary, The Universe Beneath the Sea.
Yeah, they find them on World War II ships.
Yeah.
That's got to be millions of years old ship, and they had a different kind of World War II.
Yeah,
but what's
right.
funny is they find them on beer cans.
Yeah,
so that's really well-aged beer, Bob.
That's true.
That beer's worth a lot.
A marine geologist in the documentary put out by World Almanac, his name is Dr. John Yates. He says, well, yeah, they form super slow, million years, but we do find them around beer cans. So he was obviously, you know, trying to let people know the truth as compared to the knee-jerk lie that everything takes a million years, everything. So diatomaceous rock is claimed to take thousands, many thousands of years, heading toward the millions of years, depending on how much of it it is, in order to form. And so here, do you think, Fred, that secular geologists will mark where these leaves are and say, no, first of all, they don't want to know, right?
Yep.
And say, for as far as this diatomaceous earth extends, we know that unlike what we claim elsewhere, here it was deposited rapidly. They do not want to know that.
They don't want to know that. You know, Bob, they're going to have a problem. They find a whale in that stuff, too.
I guess they would, wouldn't they? Oh, come to think of it, we'll get to that. Yeah. That is so fun. Fred, so now we go to the school of fossilized jellyfish that we have talked about. They find these things in a mine in central Wisconsin. And the neat thing about this, Fred, is as reported in the journal Geology, these jellyfish, which there are dozens of them, they swim in schools. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, you find the school of jellyfish all in this one quarry. So it's a mine on the surface. Yet they are buried, entombed between seven different layers of rock. And those layers, until they found the jellyfish, they claim those layers were laid down, what, every 20 minutes? No, a million years of deposition between those seven layers. Mm-hmm. So over 100,000 years per layer on average each. And that's where we find dozens of fossilized jellyfish.
Yeah. And you know, jellyfish, Bob, do you know they don't have a skeleton?
They don't.
They don't. And so that's why Darwin pointed out that it's rare to find those in the fossil record.
Yes. I was swimming on the Jersey Shore, and Fred, a whole sea of Portuguese man-o-war were out there. I saw everybody. I always like to go out as far as you could get away with without the lifeguard yelling at you. So I was always way out. Everybody near the beach there, they all ran out of the water. Everybody cleared out. And I'm way out. In between me and the beach are all these jellyfish.
Oh, my goodness.
I was really scared.
How'd you get back to the beach?
I'm so thankful I did not get stung.
Yeah.
Just however.
Just kind of hung out there until
you saw
them
kind of
move.
Yeah, because their tentacles will go far.
Yeah.
You know, meters far. So here we have this school of jellyfish, and we show photos. You could see their fossils. And either this story is make-believe, there is no journal of geology, the whole journal doesn't exist. There is no paper that we've linked to. There are no seven layers that are claimed to have been deposited over a million years. And there are no jellyfish. They don't exist either. And there are certainly no jellyfish fossils in layers that don't exist in a journal that doesn't exist. So either we made the whole thing up, or those seven rock layers were deposited rapidly, capturing a school of jellyfish.
Yeah, and I don't expect we'll see that in the textbooks. But anyways, so, you know, we've got a second school of jellyfish. So it's not just that famous one in Wisconsin.
Whoa.
But what about in Australia?
Oh,
the Iron Formation, the Brockman Iron Formation.
Yeah, that's right. And so there also, those jellyfish that are turned to stone there in Australia, they constrain the rate of strata deposition there also. So, Fred, some will say, well, a few jellyfish got caught and buried in one layer, and they died, and they're buried there. But the next layer came along 100,000 years later, and lo and behold, on the exact same spot, just 3 feet above, a few more jellyfish.
Family reunion.
Family reunion. Mm-hmm. They always go to that same spot in Wisconsin. Yeah. I know people from Wisconsin. It's a nice place to go to. Well, then they got covered, and then it happened seven times in a row. The jellyfish kept going to that same place, and a few of them got stuck as fossils.
Unbelievable that there's no way. How can you believe that took millions of years?
Right.
And you know, it's like the big squeeze, Bob. We've had a show on that, right?
Evolution's big squeeze.
So these polystrate fossils are squeezing. It's compressing their timeline for this stuff to happen.
Yes.
The next kind, Bob, is the trilobite. These are so cool. And you've got a great picture at rsr.org/polystrate.
Yes. This is the trilobite that was donated to Real Science Radio. It's awesome. You look at it. There's still color. You could. It's an incredible fossil.
That's
it's
a cool picture, and it kind of you give it perspective by showing it next to your laptop.
Next to the laptop with a photo of Fred Williams dressed as a caveman, and of me too at Red Rocks. Right,
so either that's a really big fossil or that's a really small computer, like a toy computer.
Right. So, yeah, you can see the perspective. It's a large trilobite fossil in stone. And I also included in this photo, so when you look at it top down, you just see this huge, gnarly-looking trilobite.
Mm-hmm.
And they are gnarly-looking. On the side, I took a couple photos from the side of this big block of stone. Because you look at the top and it just looks like a stone. Well, on the side, you see that that entire rock, that whole package that has the fossil in it, buried in it, is made up of many microstrata. Yeah,
different layers.
Yeah, microstratum, maybe dozens of layers in about an inch and a half thick. Where the trilobite is pressed
in
there.
That's a PST, a polystrate trilobite.
Yes. So
that's amazing, actually. That's a super cool picture. Isn't that's neat how you did that.
Yeah, isn't that cool? So you can see the layers that are in this stone, and the polystrate is buried in this somehow. So now trilobites are typically found in limestone. Limestone is supposed to be deposited so slowly, they say, at the bottom of a shallow placid sea. Could we have some music, please? Maybe from CNN. You know, we're in church, as far as they're concerned.
Yeah.
A million years is like being in church.
Yeah.
They must have went to some boring churches. So, at the bottom of a shallow placid sea, over millions of years, calcium carbonate falls from shell creatures to the bottom. And so, Fred, they say that it just grows like that, one grain at a time. So it's obviously going to take tens of thousands of years to get, you know, a foot of it, at least. In fact, we've estimated at the Grand Canyon, they claim that the red wall limestone from when it started to when it finished, that strata, it took 4,000 years per inch to form, if they're right.
Yeah. And that dramatic music makes a lot of people think, oh, this has got to be true. You know, it's like brainwashing the mind.
Yes.
Wow.
So trilobites that are three-dimensional, that are buried in rocks that either show multiple layers or rocks that we're told took thousands of years to form an inch of it, and you've got a trilobite fossil that's three-dimensional and more than an inch thick, there are millions that are more than an inch thick of those trilobites, then what that tells us is that rock right there was deposited rapidly. And that's what the secular geologists do not want to know. They'll close their eyes and put their fingers in their ears and they'll hum.
Yep. Yep.
Rather than say, hey, that is interesting. Let's look at where that strata is and how far it extends. Yep. So as people look at this page, Fred, they could click, for example, click on over to the 171 tadpoles that all together, this group of tadpoles, and they're buried in diatoms, which had to take, how long does a tadpole survive after it's dead? I mean, they're so delicate. So the story fails everywhere you look. This mesosaur, not a mosasaur, a mesosaur, click on that, you'll see that this extinct creature is buried in what we're told are these multiple varve layers, varve, V-A-R-V-E, which have to be at least annual, and you do the math and you think, could that mesosaur sit there on the bottom of this lake or shallow sea for all that time? We know with videotaped research that entire whales, their carcasses off the coast of California, they're gone within a couple months. They're gone because creatures scavenge. They eat dead organisms.
And that shows no erosional patterns. You know, like, go back to those coal seams. You've got some great pictures on the webpage. These are flat gaps. I mean, that's a whole other problem that they have with this.
Yeah, they do.
Why are they flat? There should be all kinds of erosion. Bob, we're out of time, but I'd like to go back to that whale that we mentioned that's buried in diatoms.
Oh, yeah.
A whale. So
this is in a quarry in Lompoc, California. It's in a mine, actually. And diatomaceous earth is valuable for whatever they use it for, fertilizer, whatever they do. And the rate that old earth geologists claim that diatoms are deposited to build up, the deposition rate is a tenth of a millimeter per year. So,
tenth of a millimeter.
So in a decade, you get a millimeter. So how many millimeters do you need to cover up this 80-foot fossilized baleen whale that's buried in diatoms?
Lots of
them. Lots of them. So Dr. Andrew Snelling, he did a paper on this. We linked to that paper. This is powerful evidence that, and what they have to claim then is the diatoms are somehow not original to this mine. And somehow they all got transported, happened upon a whale, and reburied the whale. This whale, it's been called a whale of a tail, a whale standing on its tail. It's like at a 70-degree angle?
Yeah, about that.
So it's not quite standing. You know, it came to rest on a hill that's being buried by layers, nice, beautiful, regular layers of diatoms. And if you find these layers of diatoms anywhere in the world, they will tell you that they took millions and millions of years to deposit. But that whale should tell them, well, no, let's see how far these diatoms go. What's their extent? This had to be deposited rapidly.
Well, you know, Bob, some people can, you know, stand on their head for, you know, extended periods of time.
Yeah.
Perpendicular.
Yeah.
Try to do that at a 70-degree angle and then can be buried over millions and millions of years of sedimentary deposits.
Yeah.
That whale did quite the trick.
Yeah, it really
did. Holy cow.
Yeah. And this was first reported in Chemical and Engineering News. Sounds like a young earth rag, doesn't it? Chemical and Engineering News by Kenneth M. Reese in an article titled Workers Find Whale in Diatomaceous Earth Quarry.
Hmm.
Then after that report, Fred, from the National History Museum of Los Angeles, Lawrence G. Barnes reported that he saw other whales with a small seal, fish, and birds in that quarry, which is about 250 to 500 feet above sea level. And so the point here for our secular geology friends and Gregory Wrightstone is that this whale is a perfect example of fossils from around the world buried in allegedly slow-forming layers or in multiple strata that anywhere else in the world you find that strata, you're told that kind of rock takes millions of years to form.
And with a straight face, they will tell us that, Bob, there is no evidence for a global flood.
No evidence.
No evidence.
None whatsoever.
Yep.
All these polystrate fossils were put there by Moses. Just like he went around the tops of the mountain ranges and he put seashells in the rocks.
Bob, on Judgment Day, do you think they will be with excuse?
They will be without excuse.
They will be without it. That's been my bet.
You know, the evidence for the global flood, rsr.org/evidence. What a list, a bulleted list of evidence.
Yep.
It's just, Fred, that's got to become one of the top Google ranked results when people Google evidence for the global flood. We got to work on that.
You need to work on that. Hey, or list of polystrate fossils. You guys need to do better, Bob, because I found out today from one of your producers that you're number one on the list.
You mean if people Google list of polystrate fossils, we're number one?
Yeah, number one.
What a shame. We got to do better than that, Fred. All right. So I think next week, Lord willing, we'll complete the series on polystrate fossils. And until then, I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams.
For Real Science Radio, may God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
talking about.